How do our providers process emerging clinical research, which is just so hard to keep up on, right? Literally, if you were reading every study just in your field, you'd never have time to practice. What do you see AI doing that will change how providers not only personally assimilate clinical research, but will it change how they talk to their patients and how they communicate with their patients about research related to their condition?
It will certainly, because knowledge is power, right? I've always told my students that knowledge is quickly becoming a commodity, and the soft skills that allow you to interface with patients, with interfacing with colleagues, are really the skills that are going to separate people in the future.
This episode of Vital Conversations is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Tim Cohen, and welcome to Vital Conversations, sponsored by Focus Solutions, where we talk to industry leaders about what's happening in healthcare, particularly at the intersection of the work we do with IT and data. I'm really pleased today to have Dr. Jeff Jensen as my guest. Jeff is currently the Dean of the Arizona College of Podiatric Medicine at Midwestern University in Glendale. He's also the chair of the American Association of the Colleges of Podiatric Medicine. Jeff, thanks for being with us today. So we're going to try something that could be a little bit dangerous. We're going to take two non-technical people, and we're going to have a conversation about AI and medicine. But I think this is appropriate, right? Because we're not going to talk about the bits and bytes. But I'm particularly interested, given Jeff's role in training a next generation of physicians, to explore what does this new technology mean about how we train doctors, how doctors and patients interact, even how we do things like process clinical research. Jeff, let's start with the interaction with the patient. So a physician and a patient meet in the exam room. What do you see as you look down the road on how AI is going to change that interaction between the doctor and the patient?
That's a great question. And I think it spans the entire educational opportunity for students, residents, as they go into practice afterwards. I can tell you for sure, in the clinic right now, there's software that doctors walk into the room. It's a new patient. Software will allow you to interview that patient, go all the way through a discussion on labs, x-rays, plan, and the doctor's note is literally made for them on their computer. You can only imagine the impact that has on a busy doctor who for the last 10, 12 years has been embroiled in trying to manage time to finish their electronic medical record. There's no question that over time, doctors I talk to, the major variable for burnout in medicine is the charting requirements.
Absolutely.
And we see it. We see it in doctors working after work. We see them working on weekends trying to catch up. I had one friend who was in internal medicine, and he also did a lot of infectious disease work. And he said on a 2,000-hour year, he spent an extra 680 hours doing charting because his computer tracked all the time that he was putting it.
Right.
So you can only imagine the influence that advanced technologies have at the end when you've already gone through school, you've already, you know, done all the things we'll talk about in a few minutes, but the impact that technology has for doctors, it'll increase careers in terms of
span,
because now doctors get to do what they like to do, see patients. Yeah.
If we go back 15 years ago to, you know, the passing of the High Tech Act and the rapid adoption of EMRs, what you just described is the number one complaint we heard from physicians across the board. And we took the most highly skilled, highly trained, most expensive person in the process. And to your point, we created 600 hours of data entry clerk that they're now back. I just experienced what you talked about as a patient with my orthopedic surgeon who walked in and said, hey, do I have your permission to hit this little button on my phone? And consequently, all the eye contact was back. it was a natural conversation about my care. And when it was over, yeah, hit the button and his note was generated. So if that changes, let's talk about one other thing, and then I'll work backwards into how this is going to impact how folks like you train our next generation. There is the conversation and there's the documentation. And then a lot of medicine is, how do our providers process emerging clinical research, which is just so hard to keep up on, right? Literally, if you were reading every study just in your field, you'd never have time to practice. What do you see AI doing that will change how providers not only personally assimilate clinical research, but will it change how they talk to their patients and how they communicate with their patients about research related to their condition?
It will certainly, because knowledge is power, right? I've always told my students that knowledge is quickly becoming a commodity, and the soft skills that allow you to interface with patients, with interfacing with colleagues, are really the skills that are going to separate people in the future. So I'll give you a couple of examples on that. If I'm seeing patients and there's a very common, let's say I'm treating diabetic foot complications and bone infections are very prevalent. If I were to go to PubMed, download 25 evidence-based articles on bone infections in the foot or osteomyelitis, you can actually feed that into AI and it will give you a slideshow, or it can give you a 20-minute podcast highlighting the evidence-based medicine around that topic. It's almost scary, and you can imagine how it's scary on one hand, but gosh, what a resource for physicians, right. And medicine in general. But you can even imagine how it's going to just completely change the continuing medical education environment.
Absolutely.
And then it extends into education also, because I can tell you right now, if I went through our clinical courses at the university, you know, we're always updating the latest and greatest research. Right. But to your point, how do you keep up on all of it?
Right.
I mean, we can do that now, and right. We can continually update our lectures and update our PowerPoint slides to make them completely relevant to the latest and greatest evidence-based medicine that's been published. So not only education, not only CME, but also that patient, the knowledge base that allows us to treat patients and make better diagnoses and hone in a treatment plan for them. It really enhances the breadth of what we can do. And really it helps doctors be better diagnosticians, right?
What will it do for those of you that are educators on how you will change the preparation process for incoming, you know, new students that walk in, you know, first day, got that lab coat and have no idea what they're doing? How will the preparation change?
That's a great question. And you know, I have to just go back a few years when we were all at home during the pandemic, and how are we going to deliver education to students? At our university, we still allowed everybody to come to the college and sit, you know, with barriers and face masks and whatnot. But we also enabled them to live stream the lecture if they wanted from home. We also gave them an opportunity to lecture capture, so that they could go back and watch a lecture at, you know, 1.5 times speed. If you take that as a foundation for vaulting education forward, now if you layer AI on top of that, right. We are giving highest quality evidence-based lectures in a way that is not difficult to attain.
Right.
You know, like you, to your point, I mean, if we were going to do PubMed searches and we're going to read every single article and we're going to own right. everything that comes out every single day, I mean, the amount of literature that is coming into different specialties now is almost overwhelming. But with AI's capabilities, we can kind of condense that to give us the latest and greatest information in any specific pathology yeah. that we see.
Now, let's go to the flip side of that. So the physician can take those 25 PubMed articles very quickly, assimilate them, but now so can the patient. And right for, and for a long time, doctors have dealt with the problem of Dr. Google, right? The patient walks in with, you know, 25 patients, pages they printed off on Google, they've self-diagnosed. Well, that now goes to a whole new level, because I too, as the patient who couldn't understand those 25 articles, can now run those through AI. How does it, What do you tell the doctors to do when the patient walks in and they're using AI and you aren't?
Well, you know, nowadays, it used to be a Google search and you never knew whether it was from a reputable source or not. Right. And patients, of course, you know, they've got, they're subjective in their assessments, right? And they're hoping it's one thing or another, and then they see the treatment plans. But, you know, really, if you think about it, back to that knowledge is power equation. If a patient is pulling up evidence-based medicine, even though they don't even understand the words, they can be translated, right? I think that it can enhance the doctor-patient relationship. You know, I think it's better to have the AI with the current evidence-based medicine attached to it than just a random Google search of the last 10 years.
Yeah, the quality of what the patient walks in with should theoretically be higher, and maybe the doctor's spending less time like trying to bat away, you know, nutty ideas that just, you know, popped up with no evidence behind them. We've talked a little bit about diagnosis. I assume the same things apply when we consider treatment options, right? The same idea around, given the diagnosis, now, what does the evidence say about the treatment efficacy rankings? What are you seeing there? What are you excited about that may come on the second half of the provider's cognitive work?
You know, you can't treat something unless you know what it is.
Right.
So if you can develop, you know, with or without AI, a differential diagnosis of all the potential things that this pathology could be, then you can systematically narrow that down. And once you have a definitive diagnosis, there are regimented treatment plans across the board, consensus documents, for example. Before we had AI, we had consensus documents developed by cores of experts in a certain area that would put out a beautiful article that had all of the resources that they dug up themselves. AI didn't do it for them. And so that was kind of the early form, if you will, of what we're talking about, where you get a diagnosis and then you have levels of evidence to support different treatments. Now AI can do that for us. But before, we were dependent upon consensus documents and key opinion leaders coming together and sorting the data out for us. So you can only imagine where this might go as time goes on. I mean, where we're sitting today is just an unbelievable opportunity, but not everybody's jumped on board yet, of course.
Well, this gets me to another question before we come to an end. Again, you think about education and preparation for future generations and how they incorporate these tools. Will it become, do you envision this becoming part of the curriculum of you need to understand AI? Not just, it's like, are you going to have to take doctors sort of under the technical hood of AI just a little bit to say, how do you maximize large language models and how do you know where there are strengths and vulnerabilities? Is there a technical element of the education coming?
Oh, yes. And then I foresee it being incorporated into our evidence-based medicine courses because how do you attain evidence-based medicine, right? PubMed, you can go everywhere, but now AI can assist us in that process. And of course, you know, we've had lots of discussions at the university level about AI. I mean, to the point where, is AI any different than hiring a tutor? If you think about it, the end game is the same. We're preparing students. But I saw an article recently, you'll like this. USMLE Step 1 exam, which is the basic science exam for medical students. Those questions were fed into AI, and AI spit out a perfect score. So to have AI helping our students prepare for these exams, to me, is a godsend. And in many ways, you could translate that into being a tutor. For our students.
My final question before we wrap up. You're obviously optimistic that the net gains for AI in medicine are things that have you excited. Where we sit today, what's the top of your worry list as providers begin to bring these tools into their process? What most concerns you?
So one of my worry lists with AI in general is you can, you know, I have it on my phone. I can just type in anything and it spits out answers, but it doesn't have references attached to it. Right. So, you know, I tell my students, I don't mind you using AI. Let it give you frameworks for discussion. Right. Let it help you, but you still have to go find the sources to support AI. Yeah. You just can't take AI verbatim, print it out, and hand it in as a paper. You need to have the references behind it. So in some ways, it could be dangerous, but in other ways, it's forcing people to deliver at a high level. And then all of a sudden you start talking about, you know, these PDFs being loaded into AI and it's spitting out a podcast like we're discussing. It's purely an evidence-based podcast and the voices don't even sound mechanical. They're like a male and a female. And it's like it could redo the podcast industry, right? So there's so many cool things about it that I think that if we just keep our guardrails up and be aware of potential abuses and address them as they come, because sometimes we don't even know what the downside might be yet, right? As things evolve. So you're right, I'm very optimistic and what I've seen, at first, like anything, a new technology is scary and people are kind of, you know, you kind of give it that Heisman look, you know, kind of keep it at its distance. But I think the more that we use it, the more we understand it, the more we embrace it, the more we understand its limitations in different arenas, the more that it can be helpful for all of us.
Awesome. Speaking of podcasts, Jeff, you're a podcaster yourself. You have the Dean's Chat. Give us a headline on what type of stuff do you address on the Dean's Chat?
So Dean's Chat, I started it almost 2 years ago to highlight podiatric medicine. That's my profession, right? And there are so many wonderful people in our profession, and the awareness of our profession isn't quite as high as it might be. So my goal was to interview leaders in our profession, students, residents, the different colleges and deans, and really paint a picture of what podiatric medicine is for one-stop shopping on YouTube or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It's become kind of a hobby for me now, and I've met so many cool people and I've learned a lot. It's just really been an enjoyable kind of hobby and professional experience.
Sounds like people could find it in any of their primary places. It's also at deanschat.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
Dr. Jeff Jensen, thank you, sir. We really enjoyed kind of looking out over the horizon through the eyes of someone who looks at this world as an educator. Thanks for your time with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it, too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Vital Conversations is presented by Focus Solutions. Focus provides integrated IT data and software services to physician practices all across the United States. To hear more stories about physician practice leaders and what they are doing, subscribe to Vital Conversations wherever you get your podcast.